29th anniversary.
Imad Mughniyeh assassinated.
Provocation of Muslims.
Unrest in East Timor.
The nation, for yet another time last Monday, demonstrated its commitment to and belief in the values of the 1979 Islamic Revolution, known as the Bahman 22 rallies. The national occasion marked the 29th anniversary of the upheaval that three decades ago toppled the pro-Western Pahlavi dynasty. Rallies attended by people from different walks of life across the Islamic State also renewed allegiance to the declared objectives of the revolution and stressed that there would be no compromise on lofty goals and value systems. Addressing a massive gathering marking the 29th anniversary of the Islamic Revolution at Tehran's Azadi Square, Ahmadinejad said, "Preservance of the Iranian nation and the leader of Islamic Revolution Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei has made the country victorious with regard to the nuclear program. Iran has reaffirmed its commitment to the Non-Proliferation Treaty and the safeguards of the International Atomic Energy Agency." He said enemies presume that they can make Iran retreat from threats, resolutions, sanctions, and psychological war, but they have again been proven wrong. President Ahmadinejad said on Iran's nuclear program, "They have spoiled their own reputation and that of the UN Security Council, proving the Council's inefficiency." He said some of the Security Council's permanent members, in the name of peace and security, made anti-Iran decisions based on their wrong perception and detected it to the Council. Instead of apologizing to the great Iranian nation, these powers are complaining against the non-observation of the UN Security Council's former decisions. "I tell them not to insist on your mistakes. They should know that the Iranian nation will never give up its nuclear rights." The president noted that the West should find a way to make good on its past mistakes. The 1979 Islamic Revolution built on the foundations of divine and moral investment to fight oppression and tyranny, spread fear and anxiety among the ignorant global powers. Overt and covert plans were worked out at the highest levels of Western political and economic power to isolate the Iranian nation and government. Saddam Hussein's 1880-88 war against Iran was only one formidable but failed feature of the Western conspiracy to restrain and reserve the revolution direction of our people. Despite the heavy odds, the Iranians have displayed some unprecedented levels of resistance and the determination to continue and consolidate the path of righteousness without fear. Not only have ploys by belligerent powers failed time and again, the sworn enemies now admit that Iran has turned into a regional power to reckon with despite 30 years of non-stop pressures, economic sanctions, and threats of military action. In the wake of revolutionary ideology and justice-seeking causes, Iran has now turned into a model for the Muslim Ummah and regional states alike. All things considered, the revolution in Iran indeed helped raise awareness among Muslims and encourage them to move with confidence on the road to political, economic, and scientific development and share their successes in the large interest of the Ummah. Last Monday's rallies sought to reiterate this agenda for all those in search of honor and dignity in the increasingly unjust and chaotic world.
The assassination of Emad Mournier, one of the influential figures of Hezbollah, is part of the U.S.-Israeli scenario to create managed chaos in Lebanon. The assassination was carried out shortly after Arab League Secretary General Amr Moussa's latest efforts to settle the differences between the March 14 and March 8 movements failed, which led to the 14th postponement of the Lebanese parliament's vote to select a new president. Many leaders condemned the assassination, including the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. In a message to Hezbollah Secretary General Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, the leader expressed outrage at Israeli state terrorism, which targeted the young Lebanese fighter who stood against Israeli aggression on his home country during his lifetime. At the moment, Mossad and the CIA, some Arab intelligence agencies, and some local parties linked to the Western powers have formed an operational triangle to foment chaos in Lebanon. The assassination of Mournier, who was one of Hezbollah's leading lights in the areas of intelligence and military operations, was part of this evil triangle's clandestine plot to disarm Hezbollah and marginalize the popular movement. Although Mournier was martyred, Hezbollah Secretary General Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah's recent remarks, in which he said the demise of the Zionist regime is imminent, brought hope to the world's Muslims. Nasrallah asserted that the Mournier assassination, which was carried out outside Lebanese territory, makes facilities connected to Israel anywhere in the world legitimate targets for Hezbollah. This means that the world will no longer be safe for the Zionists. By assassinating Mournier in Damascus, the Zionist regime blatantly violated international law and the sovereignty of Syria. Therefore, Israel should not protest any operation carried out by Hezbollah against the Zionists, since through the Mournier assassination, Israel has institutionalized state-sponsored terrorism throughout the world. Another issue that went mostly unnoticed by political analysts was the timing and location of the assassination. In fact, the objectives were to murder one of the most prominent Hezbollah leaders and to make it appear that Damascus is not secure enough to host the upcoming Arab League summit. The evacuation of U.S. nationals from Lebanon also indicates that the United States is seeking to protect its citizens from Hezbollah retaliation ahead of implementing its plan for managed chaos. The provocative acts of Mossad and the CIA and the suspicious presence of U.S. military forces in the region have created a difficult situation in Lebanon. If rival movements do not reach a consensus on resolving political conflicts and forming a national unity government, the near future will be bleak for this geostrategically important country.
The only possible reason for Danish newspapers' decision to republish controversial caricatures that caused worldwide violent protests 2 years ago can be deliberate provocation. Publishers claim that a number of Danish papers' decision to reprint cartoons insulting the Prophet of Islam was a combined show of their commitment to freedom of speech is ridiculous. The Danish publishers have sought to justify their action as a protest against the alleged murder plot against one of the cartoonists. We find it hard to believe this nonsense. Even if there is some truth in the alleged plot against the cartoonist, this action by the Danish newspapers is totally indefensible and deserves to be condemned in strongest terms. News reports indicate that just as the cartoons were hitting stalls across Denmark, their security and intelligence service was conducting raids against would-be killers. Considering this account is an accurate depiction of events, how the decision to further hurt and anger Muslim sentiment will improve the antagonist position is difficult to understand. It is clear that in face of certain extremist tendencies that made themselves apparent in and around 9/11, much of the freedom and democracy-loving West has overreacted and adopted more extreme positions than those they are supposedly confronting. Now, if there is a fresh wave of protest, will they counter by printing more obscene and unacceptable materials and continue an exercise that breeds only hatred and violence instead of tolerance and understanding? Is it clear that editors behind this move have displayed a despicable level of ignorance as their actions stand to sour the atmosphere in an environment just returning to normal? Muslims, for their part, must exercise restraint and not take the bait of provocation that is, in all likelihood, meant only to lure them into further violence and subsequent disrupt. These are already testing times with much at stake. Indulging in a fool's action-reaction game is a path that seriously needs avoiding. But should swift and severe condemnation not come from influential circles in the West itself, the so-called divide between the West and Muslim world will further deepen with disastrous consequences for both sides.
The coordinated rebel attacks on East Timor's president and prime minister are a further tragedy for a young country still trying to find its feet after final independence in 1999. Last week's attacks are also a setback for the international community, which, having pressured Jakarta into withdrawing, plowed considerable resources into the new country. The UN mission of support in East Timor was wound up in 2005, having, as it thought, established sound economic, institutional and political foundations. At the time, the mission was hailed a success, but very quickly instability broke out as rival gangs fought each other. Less than 12 months later, UN peacekeepers were back, 1,500 UN police backed up by 1,000 Australian troops. It was only at the beginning of this month that the UN once again announced that it would start returning security control to East Timor's police. There is a range of surface sources for the violence, including the anchor of the opposition Fretilin Party at the president's choice of independence hero Zanana Gusmão as prime minister, as a way of breaking political deadlock caused by inconclusive elections. Gusmão managed to form a coalition in 2007 excluding Fretilin. There are also complaints from citizens from the west of the country who feel that they are excluded from the better opportunities in society. It was Westerners among East Timor's army who went on strike and were fired in 2006, fully a third of the force. And it was from these ex-soldiers that came the rebel forces, largely led by Alfredo Reynaldo, who have been responsible for much of the subsequent violence. It may possibly have an effect on the crisis that Reynaldo was killed himself in the attack on the president. Unfortunately, there is a deeper cause of this unrest, money. East Timor, currently one of Asia's poorest nations, is set to enjoy wealth from its substantial offshore holdings of oil and gas, which will be exploited jointly with the Australians. The final delineation of East Timor's border with Indonesia will have some impact on precisely how much oil and gas the country will have. Encouraged by the UN, the Australians have promised maximum employment opportunities for East Timorese and also claim they will help the government in the capital, Dili, not only spend the oil income wisely but also invest part of it for the long term. So yet again, a sovereign country is being destabilized by outsiders, and the price is being paid in the blood of its citizens.
Allah